Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
And we are back with Youth Sports Now. And, of course, it is the regular segment every single week on Youth Sports Now, the Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training segment. And, of course, we have our own, we call him our own, Mike Naparella, but he's really from Peak Performance Physical Therapy, but he's part of the team here at Youth Sports Now. Hey, Mike, you know, we've been, you know, wrapping up a little bit of the PGA stuff that's been in Rochester with the championship that was concluded a few weeks ago. And we just want to wrap things up on our end, too, with some of the questions that we had regarding the PGA in connection to golf and in connection to biomechanics, functionality, and everything that you do at Peak Performance Physical Therapy. So, you know, we've got this nice summer weather suddenly back here in Rochester. And, of course, it's prime golf season because we don't get to golf all year round like many people do. So we've been talking about it. And of course, Mike, the video blog post that you have up on peakptrochester.com and of course on the radio show site, which is youthsportsnowradio.com. You know, you've been talking a little bit about the body part that a golfer might be surprised to find can affect their swing. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting topic because I think, you know, so often we think a golfer's swing is so dependent upon what we call the big rocks, the places that you can really see the trunk rotating, the hip rotating, but actually a really neat place that from a biomechanical function perspective we look at all the time when we've got a golfer either as a training client or a patient is actually their neck. So if you, Greg, as we're sitting here talking and all the listeners who are out there, if you would turn your head as far as you can to the left so that your left chin approaches your left shoulder, we would normally call that left cervical rotation. Now, as a golfer, remember, the golfer is going to keep their stance over the ball at address, and they're going to try and keep their head, relatively speaking, over the ball. As you take your arms, for a right-handed golfer, as you take your arms to the right into trunk right rotation and bring the club up into the takeaway position at the top of the swing, if everyone out there kind of would turn that way to the right and keep their head still as if they're looking at a ball, you'll notice that your chin is back on your left shoulder again. And we call that in function bottom-up motion. So it's still cervical left rotation, but it wasn't done in that characteristic way that we look at as what we'd call top-down, head on shoulders, but instead it was the shoulders moving under the head that's fixed. It still requires left cervical rotation. So sometimes we'll find golfers, Greg, who they lack that cervical rotation and they're having trouble in their takeaway. Their elbows may start bending, they're cocking their wrists excessively, they're doing excessive motion and sway from their body, and it may actually be coming from the fact that their neck is lacking rotation. And of course, the opposite of that is true on the follow-through. You know, you're going to follow through and try to keep your head on the ball for at least a bit and not look too early at your shot. The right shoulder will be approaching the chin, and that's cervical right rotation. So there's other motions that can be an issue, but cervical rotation is one of those that absolutely can affect a golfer's swing. It can affect their hips, it can affect their trunk, and affect the hands and the elbow just from things that aren't right at the neck. And so that's a key place biomechanically that we want to look at in the golfer swing.
And of course, you know, everybody over at Peak Performance, you guys may be able to hopefully solve the problems of many golfers here in the Rochester area. So it would be interesting to see how many people really have these problems from a biomechanics standpoint. I know it would hopefully help their game and, of course, their body. And Mike, from one swing to another, you know, you guys at Peak Performance and some of your staff, you went out to the Bilbo baseball camp a couple of times to work with the young campers there. And I was actually fortunate enough to see this and to partake in some of the drills that they did. Tell us about that. And then I actually want to give you some of my responses and reactions that we got from some of the parents.
Great. We'd love to hear that. I just really want to thank you and Bill Bow for the opportunity to come out there. One of our staff members, Mike Galassano, who is one of the excellent physical therapists that we've got, who's been trained extensively in functional mechanics and gone through the fellowship program that I went through, Mike went out there several times. It was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago at the Bilbo camp out in Penfield, and worked with the young campers that were there on what we would call a functional dynamic warm-up. And we really think that's critical. You know, we've talked about this before as one of our topics, Greg, where young athletes are wondering, parents are wondering, should you stretch before you play? They've heard you should stretch, you shouldn't stretch. And we've talked a bit about the importance of flexibility. But one of the things that we really wanted to emphasize is that athletically, really the best thing to do before you go begin the actual practice, begin the actual game, is what we'd call a dynamic warm-up. Getting the body to move through what we call functional movement patterns, so you can warm up the muscles and tendons and joints, but also really especially the nervous system and the metabolism, so that that body is kind of pepped up and ready to go. We don't want to have an athlete sitting down in a kind of a quiet, calm, soothing position or posture, stretching a muscle in a slow manner, and then all of a sudden they get up and have to go swing at a baseball that's pitched at them at 70 or 80 or 90 miles an hour, sprint to the base, or a fielder react to a funny hop off of the grass on an infield grounder and have to deal with quick, sudden reactions. Or, and we can think of any sport you want, it becomes the same issue, is that having the nervous system and what we'd call actually the neuromusculoskeletal system, the whole package, really warmed up properly in all three planes of motion at all the major joints, so that that athlete's body has been really prepared to go out and play versus just some of the simple common patterns of movement that some kids will do, can really be helpful. So Mike went out twice. He worked with the young kids. I think it was maybe 40 or 50 kids that he demonstrated this to, and some of the coaches were able to see it as well. And hopefully it's something we'll be able to do more of in the future and even share with other groups and organizations. There's a lot of awesome ways that young athletes can learn skill and technique and even fixes for those problems that we've talked about by learning to move their body properly versus just trying to skill something. They actually can physically train to prepare even in their warm-up. So it was a great opportunity. We really appreciate it.
And, you know, the response, Mike, from the kids and the parents was very good. A couple of parents stopped in and said that they had never seen anything like it. And we explained that it was, you know, something that really should take place on not only baseball fields, but on courts and ice and all over the place to get the kids ready. And the kids loved it. In fact, Mike, I think, kind of became an honorary coach at the camp with the kids following through. In fact, he had, the second time he was there, he had three or four players who were at the first session that he did. And he called them up, and they actually helped him through these drills. And it is something that the coaches need to see. And, you know, we're definitely going to have you and Mike come on out and do this for a coach's session as well, because any youth coach can learn something from the way you guys teach these things. So I think it was a great opportunity.
I think, you know, the neat thing too, Greg, in the way that you're talking about the response the kids and some of the parents had, is when you do things that are truly functional, there's a lot of things out there right now that are being called functional. People balancing on a wobble board and doing squats, or standing on a big round stability ball and doing exercises. And those are really unique challenges. But our body gets in those positions and really is an athlete, because it's not really the true environment that we function in. I think very often the athlete will kind of unconsciously be saying, hey, that's really difficult, that's a neat challenge, but it really doesn't feel authentic. I think the neat thing is that when you do things that feel and smell and look like the sport that you're doing, the athlete knows it. You can't fool them. They know it. And I think that's why you probably saw the response you did from those kids and those parents, because you can really see the quick tie-in of that warm-up that Mike showed them and exactly how it's going to apply to a thrower, to a fielder, to a batter. And it feels like the right kind of preparation. So I'm glad they gave you that sort of feedback.
And, you know, Mike, we'll perfect transition again. I wish I could say that I set you up for these transitions, but I honestly didn't. You know, we talk about the parents and seeing these stretching maneuvers and getting ready for a game the way you do it over at Peak Performance. Some listener questions. You know, this is a question from a mom or dad who's a little bit concerned because their son is actually off to college with a lacrosse scholarship, and they're concerned about nutrition and over-practicing, and they've talked to the coach, but they're still worried parents. What can we tell them to maybe set their mind at ease a little bit?
Well, you know, Greg, I think that there's probably a lot more parents than maybe admit who are in that situation where when they were back in the high school days, they were pretty closely tied into the school, the high school, and sort of knew what the coaches were doing and could be in the vicinity or hear more closely what was going on. And when you send your young son or daughter off to college, and there's a lot more freedom and there's a lot more sort of anonymity in terms of what goes on, it can be a little disconcerting. But I guess I would just try to encourage them by reminding them that the NCAA has rules about how often you can practice and how many hours you can practice. And I would certainly hope that most programs are abiding by those and trying to remain within the legalities and the guidelines. And more now, as things like this question that the listener brought up, sports nutrition and proper ways of training, and we talk about in our realm training through three dimensions of movement and all these different things that are being researched and looked at and thought about maybe more deeply than ever. I think more and more, whether it's from a junior college level to a D3, even all the way up, of course, to a D1 level, that the strength conditioning coaches and even the sport coaches are more and more aware of these things. And when I talk to athletes more and more now, they're being given nutrition packages as part of their preseason training. And while a coach may not be sitting over a kid's shoulder in the cafeteria or at the line, making the choice for him or her as to what to put on his tray and plate, I think that the kids are being educated more and more about it, not only in the high school level, but certainly at college. And I understand their worry, but I think a lot of that not only comes in having a sense of confidence that the schools are more well-trained and educated to offer the right choices to the kids, to the young college athletes, but also to know that, you know, you haven't stopped being a parent yet. Go ahead and give the coaches a call and maybe talk with them even again with some specific questions that you have, or maybe talk with the young athlete about, can you give me some examples about what they're teaching you about nutrition or maybe different choices that you've made, so that may allay some of the fears they've got.
Great answer, Mike, and good advice. That we, you know, ultimately we never stop being parents, regardless of how young or old our children are. And in that vein, you are setting me up perfectly tonight. I appreciate it. The another listener question. This is from a parent who has a young daughter who's only age 5. And the young daughter really wants to start gymnastics. And the question is that too early? And they're very concerned about injury at that early of an age. What do you think?
Well, gymnastics is actually one of those sports where we do tend to see kids starting at pretty early ages, maybe even more than some other organized sports. And I guess I'm not tied in closely with the gymnastic coaching process and development programs, but do know that, you know, these coaches, certainly this is not a new thing to have a young athlete at very young ages starting in gymnastics, and so those coaches are, I think, generally well-versed in understanding the developmental differences of kids at those ages, and knowing, as we've said, Greg, through many different segments and topics through the course of the Youth Sports Now show, that as parents and coaches and even as athletes, we can't take a 5-year-old and treat them like a 12-year-old, and we can't take a 12-year-old and treat them like an 18-year-old or give them the programs that the older kids do. And I know that in dealing with coaches of various sports that have come through the clinic and all types of different athletes, that I think coaches generally tend to be, and this is not true across the board, but I think coaches generally tend to be aware of those things and certainly being pretty intentional about developmental processes and staging so that a young 5-year-old starting gymnastics is doing that in an appropriate way with very simple skills and low physical demand and high fun. I think that's one of the big things about a young kid starting a sport. It's really critical that coaches keep the fun element high so that they're enjoying it and they don't rob them of that spirit of enjoyment that they had about the sport by making it too serious too early. And I think a lot of those concerns that a parent has, you know, those absolutely, as we just said in this other answer, bring those up to the gymnastics instructors or whatever sport it is, and be frank with them about, you know, I have a concern about that. Can you talk to me about how you intend intentionally work to avoid overstressing them physically? Or how do you treat a 5-year-old gymnast differently than you might an 8 or a 10-year-old? Is that very intentional? And I think through those you know, open communications, maybe a lot of those fears can be squashed a bit so that they don't have those concerns. Or if the answers aren't acceptable, then maybe you need to go look at a different studio or facility or coaching program that takes into account very intentionally the developmental differences of younger athletes like that.
Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. Mike, we're glad to have you on the team here at Youth Sports Now. Once again, some fantastic information and probably, you know, one of the wisest things out of the many wise things that you have told us over the past few months is that you never stop being parents, and you've got to remember that. So thank you, Mike. And, you know, next week we'll have some more topics and hopefully some more listener questions. And they can send us those questions at youthsportsnowradio@rochester.rr.com. We'll be back with some final thoughts right after this.